Quaker.com podcast. Today is Monday, October 8th, 2012. My name is Ben Stone, and this is podcast number 211. Before I get into the podcast, I need to announce a contest. I was talking with Michael W. Dean, my friend over at Freedom Fiends and a couple other podcasts that he does. I was talking to him about a project that he had done recently called, it's a DVD called Gun Training and the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1, Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz. He sent me a free copy of it to review, and I suppose he probably hoped I would talk about it on my podcast. And I did review it. It's a great movie. I really like it. I want my whole family to watch it. I want everybody to watch it. It's a really good movie. And I was going to go through and kind of do a point-by-point, not really point-by-point, but sort of an overview on it. I might still do that later on this week. But he and I were talking on the phone over the weekend, and he had this great idea, so we're having a contest. Now, so part of this, I'm going to kind of read the thing here. So if it sounds a little mechanical, sorry about that. This is the first real contest BadQuaker.com has had. We've had a couple of, you know, fun pretend contests, you know, like win my hat and things like that, win a dirty t-shirt and things, but this is the first real contest that we've had. So, win the DVD Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle Volume 1 Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz. How do you do this? You go to Facebook. Find badquaker.com, and that's spelled bad, B-A-D, Quaker, Q-U-A-K-E-R, and then the words .com, D-O-T-C-O-M. That's how it's spelled out at Facebook. So you go to Facebook, badquaker.com, you post on the Facebook page, you have to use these words, I want to win the Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle DVD. You post that on badquaker.com Facebook page. Now, if you don't have a Facebook page, if you don't have a Facebook account, you can still enter this contest. Just email badquaker@badquaker.com. That's badquaker, B-A-D-Q-U-A-K-E-R, at badquaker.com. badquaker.com. Okay, now, If you're going to email to join the contest, then put in the subject line DVD, and in the body of the email, put the phrase "I want to win the Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle DVD." Now, if you didn't get all that, I'm going to repeat it again close to the end of the podcast. And also for anyone listening on the radio or at LRN, where it's on a loop, that way you'll have two chances to hear the details on this contest. But either get over to badquaker.com Facebook page and post that phrase on there, or else send a email to badquaker@badquaker.com with DVD in the subject line. And the phrase again is, I want to win the Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle DVD. Now, I want to assure you, if you email us, we will not sell, trade, or do anything stupid or evil with your email address. We will respect your privacy, and we won't spam you in any way. Michael Dean and I, next Sunday, Michael Dean and I will take a list. I'll take the entire list of everybody who has entered the contest, and I'll just kind of randomly number them. And then I'm going to call Michael Dean, and I'm going to ask him, let's say 100 people have entered the contest. So I'll have a list of 100 names, each of them numbered 1 through 100. And then I'll call Michael Dean, and he'll have never seen the list. And I'll say, Michael, pick a number from 1 to 100, or however many it is. And Michael will pick that number, And the name matching that number will be the person who wins the DVD. Now, so that way Mike will have no idea who he's picking, and I'll have no idea what number Michael is going to pick. So it'll be totally random. Now, we'll contact you. Like, if you emailed us, if you emailed at Bad Quaker to enter the contest, then we'll email you back, and we'll work out the details of where to ship it to and things like that. If you contact us in Facebook and enter the contest that way, then we'll contact you through Facebook. Now, there are some exceptions. Because of some limitations that Michael and I have no control over, these can only be shipped to U.S. addresses, only addresses within the United States. We can't ship to Canada or any other countries. So I'm sorry about that. You know, maybe sometime in the future we'll have a different contest where we can do something electronically. We won't have these silly limitations on us. But at the present time, in this contest, we can only ship within the U.S. The contestant must be 21 years or older. There's no purchase necessary. And this contest is not valid where prohibited by evil overlords. And the contest absolutely ends on October 14th, 2012. That's Sunday, and that's when Michael and I are going to pick the winner. And we'll contact the winner probably within 24 hours at that point. Now, like I said, I'll announce this again near the end of the podcast. So if you didn't get the details, just stick with me through the podcast, and I'll give you another chance to write them down. Okay, so that's our big announcement. Now, I have a correction to make, and it's a little bit of a correction, a little bit of an apology. I have this tendency to substitute names in a derogatory manner. And it's a little bit rude on my part, but it's kind of this little inside joke that I've carried around with me for a long time, and it's almost become a habit. So the other day I was talking about the Thrive video, the Thrive movie, and the Thrive movement, and Foster Gamble, can I call him a quasi-libertarian socialist? Does that make any sense? Anyway, he's the money man behind the Thrive movement, and he's the sort of the spokesman for it. And in a very derogatory way, I have a tendency to make fun of Foster Gamble. I end up calling him Foster Grant or Foster Brooks, or, you know, it just goes on and on. So I think inadvertently during that podcast, I may have referred to Foster Gamble as Foster Grant or Foster Brooks. So if I did, you know, that probably wasn't very cool of me. But in another sense, you know, I almost don't care. I have very little respect for somebody who, well, anyway, I won't go into that whole rant again. But I do have a tendency to do that. I'm sorry if I confused anybody. I was talking about Foster Gamble, and if I referred to him as Foster Grant, you know, I don't really care about offending him. I just don't want to confuse my listeners. I have a tendency to do that, though. I used to do that all the time back when I very first started understanding who George Herbert Walker Bush really was and his involvement with the CIA and drug trafficking and the Kennedy assassinations and all the other things that George Herbert Walker Bush somehow was always present for. I started referring to him as Papa Doc Bush, because he reminded me so much of Papa Doc Duvalier. If you're not familiar with Papa Doc Duvalier, that's an interesting study in itself of a I could do a whole podcast on Papa Doc Duvalier. What a weird character. Evil, deeply evil man. But early on, George Herbert Walker Bush reminded me a lot of Papa Doc Duvalier from Haiti. And so for years I referred to George Herbert Walker Bush as Papa Doc Bush. And then his little boy got elected, and he became, and so I refer to W, most people call him W, but I refer to George W. Bush as Papa, I'm sorry, as Baby Bush, like Papa Doc Duvalier's son, who was called Baby Doc Duvalier. Anyway, one despot, same as the next, whatever. In comes the new boss, same as the old boss. I wanted to touch on George Herbert Walker Bush for a moment, though, because he's so much fun to pick apart. You know, he was real close with Manuel Noriega. They both were employees of the CIA. Manuel Noriega got considerably more money than George Bush did, but they both worked for the same cause. Manuel Noriega was deeply involved in drug trafficking, deeply involved with the CIA, made close to $100,000 a year salary from the CIA for years and years. And then later that got boosted up to almost double that amount. And this was all. This all came out. I believe it was in the New York Times back in the 80s. The connection with Manuel Noriega and the CIA, and all the time, of course, he was laundering CIA money. He was laundering drug money. He was, working hand in hand with the DEA, so that certain drug cartel members, certain drug families in Central America would get busted and other certain ones wouldn't get busted. It was a very convenient relationship. And this went on for a long time until Noriega's connections with the Iran-Contra fiasco started to come out and become obvious. And the story stood to expose the entire CIA and all their drug connections in Central America and all their connections to all the evil things that were going on. And it looked like this was in the late 80s, it looked like this was going to drag the DEA in. And Reagan had put so much power into the DEA at that time, it would have really made the Republicans look bad if they would have been all of a sudden shown to essentially, work with certain drug cartels and not just out there white hats fighting crime like they want us to believe that the DEA really is. So it became necessary for the Reagan administration start putting a lot of pressure on Manuel Noriega to resign as dictator of Panama. And of course, for some strange reasons, dictators don't like to do that. They don't like to bow to another country and resign just because it's politically expedient to some president in some other country. So Noriega didn't do what he was told. Noriega did the ultimate failure to be a good boy and to be owned by the U.S. government, by the D.C. government. And so so overnight, Noriega became a bad guy, a guy that had been on the CIA salary for years and years and years. Now all of a sudden he's a bad guy, and the U.S. is starting to put pressure on him, and the U.S. starts making a massive military buildup in Noriega's country, in Panama. We already had bases there, but Reagan starts shuffling a lot of new military personnel down there, and they start having all kinds of really serious-looking, what do they call them, where they have practice operations, drills. I can't remember what they're called. Anyway, words drop out of my brain now and then like that. So Noriega is seeing less and less D.C. money flowing into Panama. He's seeing the Americans get more and more militant as far as their military buildup in Panama. And he's seeing all this, advanced pressure going on, trying to get him to resign. So he starts snuggling up to the Soviet Union and Cuba and some of the other, more communist governments. And so then after Papa Bush is elected and becomes U.S. president, to show how, because one of the things that Bush was attacked for, he was regularly called a wimp. A lot of people called Papa Bush a wimp. And so he had to prove himself and prove that he wasn't a wimp. So what's he do? How does he prove he's not a wimp? Well, he goes and attacks the country of his old buddy. His old, the guy that he used to work hand in hand with, he sticks a knife in that guy's back. And so they go in and they invade Panama. And a lot of people on the left, the anti-war left, were just outraged over this. They hated Bush because he had, it's a aggressive, illegal act to just go in and invade another country and arrest the head of state. That's not something civilized countries do, but that's what Papa Bush did. So he goes in, he invades his country, disposes Noriega, puts the D.C. puppet leader in control, And I'm not saying Noriega was a good guy. Of course he wasn't a good guy. He was, you know, he was head of state. There are no good head of states. So Noriega is yanked away, pulled away, taken to the United States, thrown in prison. Bush, you know, appears to not be a wimp anymore. He's a big strong guy now. He can go and attack another country, right? But these anti-war liberals, the anti-war left, were just infuriated that Bush would do such a horrible thing as to attack another country and depose its leader like that. That's terrible, terrible, terrible. Yet those same anti-war liberals that hated Bush, those same people love Obama, even though he did a worse thing to Libya than Bush did in Panama. Even though Obama did a far worse thing to Gaddafi than what Bush did to Noriega, somehow the anti-war left just loves Obama. And they still drive around with those Obama stickers and peace symbols on the backs of their Volkswagens. Isn't that goofy? They're so willingly brainwashed. Of course, we know the right is just as bad, don't we? You see, they like to play this left-right memory game. There's this game where, and they're all willing participants. All these people, all these voters, all these right-wing people, all these conservatives, all these left-wing liberals. They're all willing participants in this game, in this left-right memory game. And what you do is, you, like right now, okay, so Obama is the president, and he's an evil left-wing socialist, right? So we forget about the evil socialist, baby Bush, who was just in power. We forget about him, and the only thing we think about is how horrible that the current leftist in power is. And so, you know, so they say, oh, well, we have to get Mitt Romney in there. We have to get a Republican elected. Not so much because Mitt Romney's great, but because Obama's so evil. Obama's such a leftist. We have to get Romney in there. And they want us to forget. This is the memory game. They want us to forget the completely socialist things that Baby Bush did. They want us to forget that and just be afraid of what horrible thing Obama might do in the future. Like Romney's not a socialist, like Bush wasn't a socialist, like we're supposed to forget all the things like expanding the federal government's interference into local schools that Bush did, expanding the federal government's interference into the pharmaceutical industry the way he did. We're supposed to ignore all that stuff, the interference in the housing market. We're supposed to ignore all that stuff. Not ignore it. Forget it altogether. Forget it like it never happened. Imagine a history where Baby Bush was some kind of a right-wing conservative, right? I mean, that's how he sold himself to the voting public in 1980, that he was a conservative. And yet there was nothing conservative about him. Romney's not even trying to sell himself as a conservative. I mean, look at the two records, Bush as a governor in Texas and Romney as a governor of Massachusetts. You look at the two, and Bush certainly looks more conservative than Romney. But like I've always said, a conservative politician is a lot like a unicorn or a leprechaun. They only exist in myth and legend. There's really no such thing. If you sit down and you talk to your average conservative and you get an idea of what they actually believe and what they want government to do, there's not really any of those that ever exists that are actually in power. There are no real conservative politicians. They just don't exist. There are people who put themselves off as that. But once they get in power, all those ideas of being a conservative evaporate. And they're shown for the socialists that they really are. And the reason why is because, really and truly, the idea of being a conservative is a leap in the imagination. It's a mythology. It's not based on any kind of real disciplined philosophy of any kind. It's just like people on the left. It's just like the leftists and the liberals and so forth. It's a matter of, I want what I want, and I want government to give it to me. And because of that, I want to elect this guy who's promised me that he'll give me what I want. And the only real difference between the conservative and the liberal is that they want two different things. But they both want, and they both want government to be the one that provides. They just want the government to provide different things. Okay, I'm going to break for a commercial now. I'll be right back. Stick with me.
I'd like to talk to you about Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom. The Liberty Classroom is a collection of courses on history and Austrian economics presented in an easy, convenient way. There are video files and audio files you can download. You can participate in discussions online in the discussion boards. And there are live sessions with Tom Woods and the other educators where you can directly interact with the instructors. Now, who is this for? It's for anyone who realizes that they didn't get the real story in government-approved schools. It's also great for homeschoolers and unschoolers. Join Tom Woods and his team, and they'll equip you with one of the very best tools the Liberty Movement has to offer, knowledge, real knowledge in a usable form. At Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom, you can get all this for only $99 a year. Now, that's less than the cost of one movie DVD a month. This gets you access to absolutely everything on their site. All the courses, plus additional courses that'll be added later, the discussion forums, the live sessions, everything. So how do you do this? You go to badquaker.com. You click on the banner for Tom Woods Liberty Classroom. By using that link, you'll let Tom know that I sent you, and you'll help badquaker.com. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for sticking with me through the commercial break. Now, I was talking about the left-right memory game and how they want us to forget how the last guy was. Just be deathly afraid of the current guy getting reelected, because that'll be the end of all humanity if that happens. And in reality, you know, these politicians, most of them aren't bright enough to really have any kind of an impact one way or the other. Most of them are fairly limited in their intelligence. I'll get into that in a minute. I want to go back to this left-right memory thing. You know, if you think about Baby Bush, George W. Bush, and you compare him to Bill Clinton when it comes to gun control. Now, everybody on the right was all upset with Bill Clinton over gun control because he played around with the Brady nonsense and tried to get an assault weapons ban and things like this. And this just terrifies people on the right. But what they don't realize is that Baby Bush, sit down when I say this, be sitting down. Baby Bush actually actively destroyed more guns than Clinton ever could have even hoped to keep off the market or to ban or whatever. George W. Bush, Baby Bush, actually destroyed hundreds of tons of small arms and light weapons. And this is nothing new. It's called the Small Arms and Light Weapons Policy. It's been in place for a long time. But it's used very selectively. During the Clinton years, Clinton could have used it to stop the flow of Yugoslavian army surplus weapons and ammunition into the U.S., but he didn't. There were some in the Bosnia and the wars and so forth in there, the U.S. did destroy some weapons under the small arms and light weapons policy. But it was almost insignificant compared to the amount of Yugoslavian weaponry and ammo that came into the U.S. in the market. And this was a good thing. I'm saying this, it's good that Clinton kept his nose out of it. Anybody that remembers, Yugoslavian SKS was selling for like $2,000. And then all of a sudden they started pouring in from Yugoslavia, and they were getting down to where they were like $60, $80 each. And you could afford to go out and buy six or eight of them and some post-hole diggers and some PVC pipe and stash them anywhere you wanted or whatever. But that didn't happen with Iraqi with the AK-47s that Bush's people confiscated. Bush had literally hundreds of tons of 7.62 by 39 ammo, and Iraqi AK-47s were just brand new in cases, were just piled up and burned. They were, jet fuel poured all over them, and other incendiary devices were used, and they just melted them down, destroyed them in bulk like that. Big mounds of them in Iraq were burned in place rather than allowing companies to go in and salvage them and sell them as army surplus. And that was an intentional choice on the part of the Bush administration. They intentionally destroyed all those AK-47s and all that 7.62 ammo specifically so it wouldn't go onto the market. They didn't try to hide it. This is no conspiracy. There's no great mystery. They were very happy to do this. They would show pictures on TV of the giant bonfires of AK-47s burning and brag about it. Look, we're disarming Iraq. Well, Iraq, the people of Iraq are some of the most heavily armed civilians in the world. But these arms were the former military caches of armament. And almost all of it being that I'm talking about here was small arms and light weapons, pistols, rifles, this kind of thing, all mounded up and burned to keep them off the market. So in that sense, Bush was far more anti-gun than Clinton was because Clinton allowed the SKSs to come in from Yugoslavia, where Bush destroyed all those AKs. Now, Papa Bush did the same thing in Panama. He confiscated a bunch of arms in Panama and have them destroyed, but nothing compared to what Baby Bush did. So, you know, really, Republicans and conservatives don't realize this because they never stop and really do any kind of self-examination of what they believe and who they're supporting. But Republicans are more dangerous to gun owners than Democrats because gun owners think Republicans are their friends. But keep in mind, the Gun Control Act of 1968, it's also called the Dodd Gun Control Bill, or it's also called the father of all modern gun control. The leadership of the NRA supported and helped develop the Dodd Gun Control Bill all the way right up until right before it was made a law. And then it was only because the membership of the NRA were, openly threatening revolution practically against the leadership of the NRA before the NRA backed off, before the leadership of the NRA backed off and stopped supporting the bill right before it was passed through Congress and became a law. But, if it wouldn't have been for the membership of the NRA, the leadership of the NRA would have been right there pushing that bill right to the end. Because the NRA has a lot to gain by there being gun control laws. It's kind of like the Baptists and bootleggers scenario where not only do the Baptists want the alcohol outlawed, but the bootleggers themselves want the alcohol outlawed, because the bootleggers make a lot more money through the black market with their black market liquor than they do when it's totally legal and they can sell it in open market prices. So the bootleggers themselves wanted alcohol to be outlawed, along with the Baptists that wanted the alcohol. That's why we refer to the Baptists and bootleggers. Well, it's the same thing with the NRA. The NRA needs for there to be aggressive anti-gun activity going on. It's kind of like Alex Jones. If all of a sudden tomorrow the government became completely harmless and there was no threats at all from any of the crazies out there, then what would Alex Jones, how would he sell the fear that he sells? You see, so in a sense, and I'm not attacking Alex Jones on that. I'm just saying that if there was nothing for him to complain about, there would be no Alex Jones on the radio. And the NRA is the same way. If there was no threat to gun control, no threat of gun control, then there would be no need to have the NRA, and they'd cease to exist. And they know that. So they need gun control. Now, the same thing goes with other so-called conservative issues. Going back to Baby Bush again, Bush pushed more socialism than Clinton or Obama, either one. The possible exception is Obama's healthcare thing, but he was set up for that by Bush. Bush already put in place the pharmaceutical end of Obama's healthcare. That Bush already done that. He made the work easy for Obama. So in many ways, Bush was really pushed socialism more than Clinton or Obama. But then again, Reagan pushed more socialism than Carter did before him. if you really think about it, they talk one way, but then if you look at their actual things that they did, it's just the opposite. And going back even further, think about the Nixon China thing. You know, there's no possible way that LBJ would have gotten away from snuggling up to China, but Nixon was able to do that because Nixon had been the big anti-communist, shaking his saber in the air, rattling his saber. He had been the big anti-communist guy for like two decades. And so he can get away with going to a communist country and being all buddy-buddy with them. But LBJ couldn't do that. LBJ couldn't get away with it. So in this sense, the Republicans will talk right-wing, but they sell out to the left-wing. Their actions are leftists, even though their talk is right-wing. And the rank and file of the Republican voters buy it. And the Democrats are the same way. The Democrats talk left wing, they talk liberal, but then once they're in power, they sell out to the right. They talk out of both sides of their mouth. It's according to who they're speaking to at the time. Think about Reagan. If you're old enough to remember how Reagan worked hand in hand with Tip O'Neill, the liberal Speaker of the House during Reagan's presidency, and how they pushed through these different socialist issues by working together. Well, Clinton did the same thing with Newt Gingrich. Clinton worked hand in hand with Newt Gingrich, and it's convenient because they can blame things on each other. Newt was never a real conservative, but Newt could go back to his constituency and say, "Well, you know, I'm trying my best, but I got that liberal president up there." And Clinton could go back to his constituency and say, "Well, you know, I'm trying my best, but I've got that radical conservative Gingrich over there to try to deal with." So they play this game. They play this left-right memory game. And the voters never, you know, the memory span of the average voter is so short because they choose to be that way that they don't, they never catch on. I want to shift gears here just for a minute. Let's leave the left-right memory game behind. And before I run out of time on today's podcast, I want to touch on a thing called H.R. 6566. That's House Resolution 6566 for 2012. It's also named the Mass Fatality Planning and Religious Consideration Act. The Mass Fatality Planning and Religious Consideration Act. Now, if that doesn't just shock your boots right off, and like I was talking about Alex Jones there a minute ago, this is just the kind of thing that he feeds on. You know, this kind of, when they have things like this that happens, it just, his listenership just skyrockets. Let me explain this, basically what it is. This is an attempt to tie FEMA with local churches, crematoriums, mortuaries, cemeteries. In its most obvious form, it's the government preparing for massive casualties. Now, why would the government prepare for mass casualties? Well, you know, there are good ways to look at it, and there are bad ways to look at it. We should all be prepared all the time for anything bad that might happen. So the government's just trying to take care of us. You know, they're just thinking of you. That's what it is. They're concerned about you. So they're thinking of how they're going to bury you when they kill you. Well, that's, yeah, okay, Alex Jones jumping out there. But really and truly, you know, if you look at it from, if you believe government and you believe that they're trying to do the best, then obviously they're wanting the best preparations in case something really bad happens. But if you don't necessarily trust government and you look around and you see other things like the unbelievable quantity of ammunition that FEMA has purchased, FEMA needs all that ammunition. The massive purchase of shotguns of assault type, using their terminology, of assault type shotguns and ammunition and so forth that agencies like the Department of Education purchased and the IRS that purchased and, you know, wow, it's these things start to get a little scary. And so you can understand how Alex Jones sees these things and is able to make a very successful career pointing them out. But if you don't immediately ask why this is happening, if you just skip the why for a second and you say, who is supporting this? Once you know who, it's not hard to understand why. Why is almost always about money. Now, you could say that it's about power more than money, but in government, they're almost the same thing. Money, it doesn't have to mean power when we're talking about a free market, but they're almost inseparable once the corruption of government is introduced into the mix. You can have individual businessmen that are very wealthy and not necessarily all that power hungry. They don't necessarily use their money in a powerful way like that, or to try to gain power with it. But once you introduce the violence of government, almost all power is based on money, and almost all money is used to gain more power. So they're one and the same once it's polluted with government. But now, so when we think about this, we say, okay, so who, not why, but who would be behind this mass fatality planning and religious consideration act? Who would stand to gain from it? Well, I can think of a few people who would stand to gain. Of course, anybody in FEMA or anybody who wants to work for FEMA, because this is going to be a huge employment opportunity for a lot of people that want a cushy government job. So there's some people who are going to want it. Who else is going to want this? Well, churches, big churches, leadership of churches are going to want this because it's a good way to tap into some free government money for them. Church leadership, a big church can be really, really handy to have when there's some kind of a large disaster. FEMA can utilize big buildings like that, and FEMA can utilize the on staff, the staff that's available for them, especially if FEMA has worked hand in hand to train these church staffs. And see, so right away we have a motivation for church leadership to, even though they may vocally in front of their, like the NRA, like what I was talking about, the NRA, they may say in front of their crowds, oh, we don't want this, this is terrible, but we're going to go ahead and, in case there is a disaster here locally, we want to be good Christians, we want to be available to help. So they will be working with FEMA, and of course the church leadership will get money for that from FEMA. And the same thing goes with crematoriums, mortuaries, cemeteries, funeral home directors and these kinds of people that are already basically leeches on society. They already live off of people, they live off the very worst situations that people face in life. And they have this weird cartel on handling dead people. It's a legally enforced monopoly that they have within their guild in the handling of the dead. Families used to do all these things themselves, and some families still would given the opportunity, but they can't because the government uses the aggression of government to enforce this this cartel of these funeral home directors and mortuary people, and we're forced to deal with that. And I've had to deal with it quite a few times in the recent past. So I know what I'm talking about when I say that these people live off of the worst situations that people face. So of course they're going to have, of course, if they see the opportunity to grab some free FEMA money, of course they're going to do it. Of course they're going to work hand in hand, and of course they're going to want an act of Congress to make it official that they have more and more money and power. So if you don't ask why the government's doing this, if you ask who's behind it, who stands to gain money from this, keep in mind, before you get too paranoid about this HR 6566, keep in mind all the hype that was not too long ago about the so-called FEMA caskets. Now, to a certain extent, that was debunked. To a certain extent, the whole idea of the FEMA caskets was debunked, but not really. It turns out they were burial vaults, not caskets. But that doesn't really answer the question. If you really want to know what all those, stacks and stacks and stacks of FEMA burial vaults, if you really want to know why they're there, ask who paid for them. Ask where they were manufactured. Ask who. And when you know who, then you know why. Okay, I'm going to break again. Stick with me. I'll be right back.
Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean. Available on Amazon. Your house is your
property. BadQuaker.com uses HostGator as our web hosting service. It was fast and easy to get set up, and the support we receive is top-notch. They have helpful and friendly 24/7, 365 live technical support and a 99.9% uptime guarantee, and they have some of the best prices in the business. If you have a website, or if you want to have a website, check them out by going to BadQuaker.com and click on the button for HostGator. And thank you very much for supporting BadQuaker.com.
Okay, thanks for sticking with me through the commercial break. Now, I was talking about those, those so-called FEMA caskets that supposedly was debunked. We were told, no, these are not caskets. These are burial vaults. They are used to reinforce the ground around a casket so that the ground doesn't collapse in on the casket. And this was supposed to alleviate our fears and everything, but it never really answered the question about why there are so many of them. And some people said, they make them in bulk like that and then store them until they're needed. And some people said, well, it's because there's so many baby boomers, they're going to need them at some point in time, so they went ahead and... But most of the time... Companies, at least companies that have halfway intelligent leadership, most of the time companies hate inventory. The last thing they want is an abundance of inventory, because an abundance of inventory is a huge risk to a company. So it doesn't really answer the question of why there are so many. You would need to know who ordered them, who paid for them. Is it one company that has the contract? Was there any government money involved? And then you begin to know what the motivation was. But first you have to know who made them, who paid for them, who ordered it done. And then you can tell why. And speaking of debunking things and debunking them and actually not debunking them at the same time, who remembers those undisputable photos of the inside of the chemtrail planes? Did you see those that were floating around on the internet not long ago? They were pictures, there were several different types and several different kinds, but they were pictures of inside of like a 747 showing irrefutable proof that this was a chemtrail plane and that the chemtrail planes existed. And, of course, the first thing you have to say is, who made this plane? And what I did, the first time that I saw the pictures, I looked at it and I said, that's interesting. One of the machines that you can see in the pictures has its patent number displayed very clearly. So I did a patent search on that patent number, and I found out that it was a firefighting equipment company. And, of course, then it's not hard to chase it out, and you find out that these so-called chemtrail planes are actually airplanes that are designed to spray, fire retardant for fires. And there's a lot of information on them, because these companies that make these planes, they have a lot to gain by advertising their products. So they're very proud of their product, and they advertise it very aggressively. And it's not hard to find the... as a matter of fact, I'll put a link in today's show notes on the topic itself so that you can actually look and see one of the manufacturers bragging about how wonderful their planes are. They're firefighting air tankers. And, by the way, I'll put a link in today's show notes about the NRA and gun control, too. That's really a good article on that if you want to look in today's show notes for that. But anyway, so the first thing you ask when you see these so-called chemtrail planes is you say, well, who made it? And then you begin to understand why. Once you know who, you can begin to understand why. So this debunks the chemtrail, this debunks the idea that these pictures are pictures of chemtrail planes. But this doesn't prove chemtrails are fake. It just fails to prove that they're real. Now, there's a difference here, and you have to see this difference, because this is the same thing with the FEMA, caskets, or it's the same thing with the paranoia over H.R. 6566. Just because the pictures of the chemtrail plane, the so-called chemtrail plane, don't prove chemtrails, it doesn't prove chemtrails are fake. It just fails to prove that they're real. So we know, for instance, of things like, it came out here recently when a local television station in St. Louis did a story on how the government in the 50s and 60s admits that it sprayed in St. Louis in some of the poorest neighborhoods. It did a lot of spraying for military testing purposes. And then you start digging into the story deeper and you start finding out what they were spraying. In the UK, the government over there has admitted to doing the same thing in the 50s and 60s. And it was under the guise that they were preparing for some type of chemical war with the Soviet Union, or they were afraid of a biological attack from the Soviet Union. There's all, or a radioactive attack by the Soviet Union. There's all these excuses. But when it all boils down, you have governments of the UK and the US admitting that they actually sprayed some of the poorest people in their population during the 50s and 60s. They actually did this for test purposes. And then you start seeing the cancer rates changing, and you start seeing birth defects happening, and you start seeing sterilization. And if you go into eugenics and you start seeing how the governments were, actively sterilizing poor people in that same time frame, it's hard to look at the government and say, well, there's no possible way that they would be, this FEMA thing can't be bad because the government is so good. Well, yeah, but this the same governments that were forcibly sterilizing people in the 50s and 60s and test spraying them with things for military purposes, the same government. But one of the great weaknesses, and it's one of the weaknesses right now, and it's why we can, look around and see companies and so forth that have to do the bidding for government, governments are inept. And they have to rely on corporations to do a lot of their dirty work. They're just incapable of doing these things on their own. So as they rely on corporations to do their dirty work for them, they leave a paper trail everywhere they go. And we can see, as companies, they actually advertise and brag about their ability to do these deeds for the government. And as they do so, it exposes how evil the governments really are. Now, corporations are only slightly less inept, but slightly more corrupt than government. And this should be really comforting to people, because, as ridiculously inept as government is, corporations are only slightly better, but they're more corrupt, and because of that, it's easier to see their flaws. If you think about, things that went on with Enron and companies like this, or you see what happened with BP and the Gulf spill and all that kind of thing, it's not hard to see that this relationship between corporations and the government is, even though their relationship together is very strong, their ability to keep stuff secret is very poor. And their ability to pull things off, to pull off big stuff, and keep it quiet is very weak. Now, we know that the Nazis, everybody, we always want to take the conversation back to the Nazis, because that's, they're the epitome of evil. But if you think about the Nazis and think about how evil that their government was and things like this, they were relatively efficient at what they were doing, at their evil. But the Nazi, the Nazi Germany was an infant state. It was just a little baby state. It was only about 12 years old when it died. The DC government is 224 years old. That's 18 times older than the Nazi government. The Nazi government was also a tiny little group of people. It was never a very large government. The D.C. government is massive. There are over 3 million federal employees that answer to Washington, D.C. alone. That's not including state employees, and that's not including all the people that depend on government money within the U.S. just to eat dinner. That's not even including all of them. 3 million direct federal employees answer to the D.C. government. Now, you think about how evil Stalin was in Stalin's government. But Stalin's government was only a few decades old. By the 1980s, the USSR was so bloated that it was impossible for it to efficiently oppress its people. It didn't have the kind of leeway that Stalin had to just to do whatever Stalin wanted. That didn't exist by the 1980s. The Soviet Union just couldn't get away with that kind of thing because their government was so bloated and inefficient. And like I said, the Soviet government didn't even last 100 years. It was just a few decades old when it died. And once you realize how evil government is, you should be comforted in understanding how completely incompetent government is. So would the D.C. government do these bad things? Would they plan mass exterminations of their population? Would they do chemtrails, or would they intentionally take down the buildings in 9/11? Well, sure, they would do any of those things. I wouldn't put it past them. I'm not saying they did those things. I'm not saying I believe all these conspiracies. I'm saying, would they? Sure, they would. They would do that if they could get away with it. If it gave them more power and more profit, they would. They wouldn't think twice. They would do it. So it's not a matter of would they. It's more, are you really seeing the real thing? Because like with the chemtrail people, you ask for evidence and they come up with all kinds of goofy things. I'll accept the possibility that government will spray chemtrails. I'll accept that possibility. But then when you start to present me with evidence that's so full of holes that anybody can see past it, you got to do better than that. So would the government do these? Sure they would. Can they pull it off without being caught? No, not a chance. And that doesn't mean they didn't. Let's take the 9/11 thing. Let's just assume for the sake of conversation that they did all the evil things that the 9/11 truthers say they did. Can they pull it off? No, eventually they're going to be exposed. If they did that, eventually the truth will come out. And in the future, will governments, not only the U.S. government, but will governments try to pull off things like this, mass exterminations? Well, sure, they've always done this. In the past, they did it. They've done it over and over. Governments, once they start getting desperate, they always fall to this. And sometimes that desperation is early on in a government, as we saw with the Khmer Rouge in the 70s. It was a relatively young government that tried to establish itself through brutality. The Soviet government was relatively young when it started exterminating people and killing them off in the Ukraine by the millions. And sometimes it's when a government is really, really old. The Roman government was several hundred years old before it started mass exterminating its own. So will it? Will the U.S. government try this? At some point in time, sure it will. Because it's a government. That's what it does. Desperation on the part of the government will drive it to its own destruction. Because that's really what it is. Once the government starts to act this way, it's pretty much doomed. Now, the Soviet Union is kind of the exception because it went in that direction and then it came back some. But eventually it fell anyway. The Chinese government is kind of the exception to all rules. But the Chinese state grew pretty oppressive, and by the 1960s they were really bad. And then they pulled back some. And one of these days I got to do a podcast just on China, because the state in the way it exists in China is so much different than all the other examples that have ever existed around the world. That if I were a statist, I would always argue China as an example of a functional state, even though it's very dysfunctional. But China's an exception to almost all the rules. But it'll fall too with time. Now, what I said a second ago, desperation will drive the U.S. government to its own destruction. Now, what I meant by that was that the people in Washington, D.C. with the real power, they understand how delicate their situation is. Think of the Larkin Rose's video called The Tiny Dot. If you haven't seen that, get over to Bad Quaker where in today's show notes. Get over to badquaker.com, and I'll embed Larkin Rose's video, The Tiny Dot, in today's show notes. Take a look at that, and you'll see what I'm talking about. The people in power understand how delicate their situation is. Most people in government, you think about people like, can't remember that one idiot's name who asked if we moved too many troops onto this one island, if the island would tip over and sink. I can't remember the guy that said that, you know, there's Nancy Pelosi. I mean, here's a person who, you just watch her talk and you can tell she's an idiot. Elizabeth Warren, remember the video of her where she just blathers off a bunch of nonsense? She's a complete moron. You listen to George W. Bush talk. The guy has like 3 active brain cells. John McCain, just as bad. He's an idiot. He fools people. People are willingly fooled by him. But if you actually listen to him talk, he's not bright at all. And ignorance breeds fear. But remember that these people in government, they fear you far more than you could possibly fear them. Because they understand exactly what was in that in Larkin Rose's Tiny Dot video. They understand that they're one tiny dot controlling a massive group. And they understand that at any particular time, that group can just change its mind. And they lose power. They lose everything. You think, you know, those people that I just mentioned, those idiots, Elizabeth Warren, Nancy Pelosi, you think these people don't know what happened during the Russian Revolution, during the French Revolution, during, you know, even modern revolutions? Government is in a very delicate situation. And that's why they have to prepare for every possible scenario to defend themselves against the population. So what lobbyist actually wrote this H.R. 6566? Who? Who was behind it? Because these guys don't write their own acts, their own bills. Mostly the lobbyists take care of that for them. They just push them through and try to get them signed. So what lobbyist was actually behind that? Who stands to gain from H.R. 6566? Church leaders? Morticians? Yeah. See who's behind it, and you'll see why. You'll see why it is. It's not necessarily foil hat. It's not necessarily evil, although it can be used that way. Now, I want to, you're here right at the end, I want to bump us back towards that contest that I was talking about earlier. Win the DVD, Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1, Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz. How do you do this? Go to Facebook and find badquaker.com, spelled Bad Quaker, D-O-T-C-O-M. Find badquaker.com at Facebook. Post there exactly these words: I want to win the Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle DVD. Post that on badquaker.com's Facebook page. Now, if you don't have a Facebook page, email badquaker@badquaker.com. Spelled just like that, badquaker@badquaker.com. In your email, put DVD in the subject line and put the words, I want to win the Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle DVD, in the body of the email. And we won't sell, trade, or do anything else stupid with your email, and we won't do anything evil with your email address. We won't give it to anybody. We won't spam you. Nothing. I promise. Michael W. Dean and I will randomly choose a winner next Sunday, October 14th, 2012. This contest is for U.S. residents only. You must be 21 or older. No purchases necessary. And it's not valid where prohibited by evil overlords. And the contest absolutely ends October 14th, 2012. That's this coming Sunday. So if you're hearing this in an archive somewhere, sorry, it's over. So get over there to Facebook, to badquaker.com on Facebook, and enter that exact phrase, I want to win the Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle DVD. Enter that into the badquaker.com Facebook page, or put it in the body of an email message, sent to badquaker@badquaker.com with DVD in the subject line, and that'll let us know that you're not sending a spam. And I'm going to number the names. I'm going to number all the people who enter, and I'm going to have Michael W. Dean on the phone with me, and he's going to randomly pick a number. So he won't know how the names are numbered, and I won't know how he's going to pick the number. And whoever the winner is, Michael Dean will send you a copy of the DVD. Okay, and as always, for more on liberty, property rights, and the zero aggression principle, go to badquaker.com. Thanks a lot, folks.